Hey there.
I host a show called Therapy Gecko, where I dress up as a lizard and talk to anonymous strangers from the internet about their lives. They tell me their relationship problems.
I found out that I was related to the guy that I was dating.
Their hobbies.
I collect my roommate's toenails and fingernails.
Their secrets.
When we did not have toilet paper, I would use the shower curtain.
And also sometimes kind of serious stuff.
I have anxiety when I talk to people.
I'm also sometimes joined by celebrity guests like Doja Cat, Lil Yachty, Bobby Lee, and Eric Andre. Some of the more interesting calls we've gotten recently include a guy who argued with a demon living on his wall, a caller drunk at his job at a middle school, and a caller wondering whether or not he should transform into a dog. So if you're sick of your own life and you want to get lost in the life of a stranger, search for Therapy Gecko wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. With over 350 million global monthly visitors, Indeed's matching engine helps you find quality candidates fast. You get to ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. It's not just about hiring faster, though. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Don't search. Match with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
And now, prepare yourself for the only talk radio show you'll want to turn up.
Crank this thing.
Sirius XM Pandora presents the place where your hard rock and metal voice can still be heard.
You bet your ass, baby.
Unfiltered, uncensored, say whatever you want.
Hit the record button. Anything can happen, you know?
I know that ain't nobody out there came to be mellow tonight, now did you? I say there ain't nobody. I'll say there ain't nobody not out there that even wants to be a little bit mellow. Now is there? Anybody wants to get mellow, you can turn around and get the fuck out of here, all right?
This is the Trunk Nation Podcast. With host Eddie Trunk.
Hey, everybody, it's Eddie Trunk, and welcome to the Eddie Trunk Podcast. New episodes every Thursday, always free. Get it wherever you get your podcast, and be sure to subscribe so you don't miss anything. As I tell you guys every week, the interviews you hear on the Eddie Trunk Podcast all originate on my Sirius XM radio show, Trunk Nation, which is heard live Monday through Friday, 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern Time on Volume, Channel 106. It replays every night, 10 to midnight Eastern, and full shows, audio, video, and more anytime you want on the Sirius XM app. If you are in the U.S. or Canada and you can get Sirius XM and you are only listening to this podcast, you are only getting a tiny, tiny fraction of what I do on a daily basis on the radio. So be sure to come on board with us and join us every day talking rock on Trunk Nation on Volume. To that end, last week's podcast, we gave you something a little different for the first time in ages, not an interview, but you saw something else that we do on the show from time to time, these throwdowns where we debate classic records or classic moments in rock. A lot of fun. And you can get involved in all of that and call in, of course, if you come on board and listen on the radio every day with us on Trunk Nation. Thanks to everybody listening around the world to the podcast. Much appreciated. We're back to our interviews, of course, which will always be the bulk of what you get on the podcast. And this week, I've got one for you that originated from my Vegas studio. It's amazing how many people in the music community, in the rock community, in the entertainment field now live in Las Vegas. Obviously, Las Vegas is the entertainment capital, and there's always things going on and residencies and people coming through there, and that's been the case for a very long time. But what's interesting now is people living there, moving there, and being a homeowner there myself now, I can tell you it is crazy what's happening in the suburbs and the growth of that town. And every day I'm getting calls or texts from people that are friends saying that they are indeed moving or have moved to Vegas. So it's incredible the people that I'm able to pick off and have on the show when I am at my place in Vegas. And one of the guys that moved there most recently is Geezer Butler, of course, a founding member of Black Sabbath, the band's bassist and lyricist. Geezer, I've known forever. We spent some time together not too long ago in Austin, Texas for the Dio documentary premiere. And I spoke to Geezer's wife, Gloria, who's also his manager, who I'm in touch with. And I said, you know, when he's got time to come and hang out, have him come by the my place. Let's do a show together. And sure enough, he said, yeah, he'll do it. And I've said this so often. To me, the best interviews are often when somebody has nothing to promote. They're just hanging out, especially when it's somebody like Geezer Butler with the history he has in music. And it was funny because before he came over the place to do this interview and sit in with me, he said, his wife called me. She said, you know, he's a little concerned because he really doesn't have anything to talk about. He's got nothing really going on. And I said, no, that's good. That's fine. He's got 50 years of being in the band that created heavy metal to talk about. We're good. So that is exactly what we did. And he did, of course, come over, and you're about to hear that conversation. And if you've I'm sure you've heard interviews with Geezer before, but if not, he's got a very dry sense of humor. He's very funny, actually. And he came with his dog, and we had a nice chat, and then he left. And when he left, he said, you know, I've got a book coming out, and when that book is ready, I want to come back on and talk about the book. And I said, of course. So we'll do more with Geezer when his autobiography comes out, which I believe is probably early next year. Hopefully we'll do stuff with him again earlier, but certainly for the book when it comes out next. So it was great visiting with him. This interview took place, I don't know, about a month ago. So I wanted to get it on for you on the podcast because it's Geezer friggin' Butler. I mean, come on, one of the founding fathers of metal, and I think you're going to enjoy the conversation. Don't forget to follow me on social media at Eddie Trunk, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook page, eddietrunk.com is the site. Thanks to everybody I met in Houston on Saturday last week at the Ace Frehley Show at Warehouse Live. Great time there. I'll be back there in June for the Tom Kiefer LA Guns Faster Pussycat Show to host that, but always a good time at Warehouse Live. And thanks to Justin Ellerton, the owner there, for having me, and all the great rock fans I met in Houston and hung out with. So keep an eye on my social media. I'll let you know about guests on the radio show, upcoming appearances, and all sorts of other rock news and what have you. But let's get to this week's interview. Again, from Vegas, Geezer Butler, one of the, as I call it, the founding fathers of metal, because Sabbath are the creators. And we'll get to that right now on the Eddie Trunk podcast. All right, so Geezer Butler has been located. He should be walking in any minute. There he is. He's found it. he's got a dog with him too. Look at this. This is the first time I've ever had an animal in my new home. Oh. Hey, buddy. Hi, Deb. Yeah, of course. Yeah, we're live on the air, Geez.
Hello, Eddie.
sit down, please, and put that headset on. Yeah. Good to see you, Geez.
You too.
Let's get you wired up so the audience can hear you. Everybody's excited you're here. I appreciate you doing this. Ladies and gentlemen, Geezer Butler.
Hello there.
Did you have trouble finding it? Would you take a dip in my pool for a second?
I've been driving around for 3 hours.
Your old bandmate, Steve Stevens, was here not long ago, and he did the same thing as you. I had to go find him milling around down by the pool there. But it's tough to find because it's new construction. But
yeah,
good to see you.
You too.
I like your shirt. What's it say? Hell Satan? Oh, man. How do you like Vegas?
I love it.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Been here a little while now, right?
About a year, yeah.
I think you bought your place around the same time I bought this, actually. And you're out of L.A. completely now?
Yes.
Happy about that?
Yeah, because you can actually go somewhere and it doesn't take you 3 hours to get there.
And not having those taxes is not a bad thing either, right?
That's right, yeah, but that's still to be determined.
Your bandmate Ozzy has had enough of living in LA too. He's moving back to England.
Yeah, Sharon's already there, I think.
Are you? Do you stay close in touch with your Sabbath bandmates?
Not at all, no. Well, we were on the road for 50 years together. We couldn't stand the sight of each other at the end.
So you're done. When you're not together, you're done. Is it the occasional text message or not even?
I sometimes email Tony, or he emails me, about happy Christmas or happy birthday, and that's about it.
When was the last time you talked to Ozzy?
2017.
Is that right?
Two days after the final gig.
Is there any issue, or just you doing your own thing?
No, we just sort of went our own ways.
What about Bill?
I saw him last time. I seen Bill was at the Lifetime Grammy Award. So that was about 2 or 3 years ago.
All right. Well, we of course hung out at the in Austin recently for the Dio documentary, which was a lot of fun. Me and Sebastian stole your popcorn after you left. You left it all there, so we ate what was left of your popcorn.
Probably had butter in it or something.
No, it's quite good, actually. But the film, what did you think of the film?
I loved it. I mean, I thought it was so emotional towards the end.
Yeah.
And it was good because it didn't slag anybody or anything like that. It was really emotional. I really did think that.
You actually were with Ronnie in his final moments, were you not?
Yeah, we were there right until about 4 hours before he finally left us.
Did you get to have a final word with him? Did you know it was the end?
Well, he was, he was so out of it on morphine because of the pain. He was just like sort of lying there, and we knew that it was just a matter of time before he left us. So at one point, but just before I left, I held his hand and I says my goodbyes to him. Mm. And then 4 hours later, he was gone.
Was there any music geese that you made with Ronnie that has not come out, even if it was from the last record, The Devil You Know, stuff that was left off of it or anything?
Not really, no. I mean, there's obviously outtakes and stuff like that. I can't think of anything that we didn't actually put on the album. How
about back in the early Sabbath days? Did you guys ever over-record? I know there's been a lot of Sabbath box sets that have come out. Volume 4 came out. Master of Reality came out. All these second record stuff came out from. Was there some bonus stuff on some of that, and some not so much, just remixes and things? Did you guys used to over-record at all, or was it just what was needed at the time?
It's usually just what we needed. I mean, there's demo stuff out there. I think Jeff Nichols' cousin or something found a tape when Jeff Nichols, the keyboard player, passed away. He left a tape of demo stuff. Well, not demo, rehearsals. And I think it was his cousin or something put it on the internet.
Tony wasn't happy about it.
Tony went mental about it.
He was on here with it talking about not how unhappy he was that came out like that.
Yeah.
I think it was something from Heaven and Hell, right?
Yeah, the first album. Yeah. I think it was because we did like 2 or 3 songs that didn't really come up to the mark.
Right. Tell me about your life now, because you're here in Vegas. I think you also have a home in Utah, right?
Yes.
And you're here. You did Deadland Ritual. You started up with a new band with Matt Sorum, Steve Stevens, who I mentioned, Frankie Perez. You put some music out. You played a few gigs. You had said that's pretty much a done issue at this point, right?
Yeah. I mean, it was literally like starting all over again. And
hard to go from private planes with Sabbath to vans,
exactly,
in clubs.
And you play, you're staying at the Four Seasons hotels and Ritz-Carlton suites and everything, and then you end up in Holiday Inn.
Right.
And I'm not being a snob about it, but
I would understand. It's hard to change gears like that.
The European buses were absolutely horrendous. There's these great big double-decker things they have over there. They don't have the the pre-vibes like you get in America.
Right.
And I just could not sleep on them. And the first two gigs, we started in Sweden, and we had to finish in Sweden, get straight on the bus, drive to Germany. And we got there at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, straight onto the stage without any sleep or anything. And just far too old for that.
Yeah, yeah. So would you consider yourself retired from music now, or are you still recording and writing, and would you like to do something?
I think of myself as retired now, but I'm always playing music. It's in my blood. It's what I do.
So around the house, do you always have a bass handy? Are you always...
Oh, yeah.
Still?
Yeah, absolutely. I've got my studio in this house, and the studio in the house in Utah, and the studio in my house in England.
So do you do a lot of writing?
Yeah, when I'm in the mood.
And what are you going to do? What do you do with it? Is it the intent to maybe give it to other people, or do you want to maybe do a record at some point?
If I come up with anything that I think is worth putting out to the public, then I'll do it. But at the moment, it's just more like a hobby.
Did you like the Deadland Ritual music? Did you like what you guys created musically?
I thought it was really good. Yeah.
I did too.
Yeah.
I thought it was real interesting. Do you play guitar a lot?
When I'm writing, yeah.
You originally, I read, started out on guitar. Is that right?
Yeah, I used to have a black Fender Telecaster.
And you're so known and so accomplished as a bass player. How did you make that transition? Why did you change?
Well, rhythm, the stuff that I was getting into, like Hendrix and Cream and bands like that, didn't have rhythm players. Because I always became a rhythm guitarist because I wanted to be John Lennon. And as soon as I seen the Beatles, that's all I wanted to play. So, and I didn't really think about bass guitar. And then when Sabbath got together, we had a rhythm guitarist, and I switched to bass.
There was a rhythm guitarist in Sabbath early on that wasn't Tony?
Yeah. The original, when it was called Polka Talk Blues Band and Earth.
Right.
We had...
there was a second guitar player?
Yeah, and a saxophonist.
A what? A saxophone player?
Yeah.
So it was you, Ozzy, Bill, Tony, a second guitarist, and a sax player?
Yeah.
That was Polka Talk Blues, and that was just before it became Sabbath?
Well, it became Earth after that.
Earth.
When we got rid of the sax player and the rhythm guitarist, it became Earth.
But you weren't the rhythm guitarist in Polka Talk?
Nope. I was the bass player. But I used to play, because I couldn't afford a bass, so I used to tune my rhythm guitar down and play bass on that.
Did you ever play any guitar on Sabbath records? Any parts?
Yeah. What was it now? I think on volume 4.
Yeah?
I did an outro part on 12-string guitar.
Wow, that's wild. When you made the switch from guitar to bass, what did you mentioned John Lennon was a big influence as far as playing guitar, but was there a bass guy when you started playing bass?
Jack Bruce and Cream.
Jack Bruce.
Oh, because Clapton was like, we all used to call Clapton God back then in the 60s. And I went to see Cream and I was just mesmerized by Jack Bruce. I'd never even thought about bass players before. Even McCartney, I used to think of McCartney as a singer, but not a bass player for some reason.
Right.
And it wasn't until I saw Cream and the way Jack Bruce is playing his bass that I even thought, wow, that's what you can do on bass.
Yeah. And then you applied it to what you guys, you and Tony, were writing at the time and what was coming together as Sabbath. I and many others feel very strongly that Sabbath created heavy metal. I call you guys the founding fathers. When you were making the first Sabbath record 52 years ago, I'm sure you didn't really, there was no definition for that music, right? It was just what was coming out of you. When did you first hear the term heavy metal being applied to what you were doing?
I think I told you before when we were on tour in America, I think it was the second tour in the States. And I read this review and the guy said, this isn't music. It sounds more like a bunch of heavy metal being smashed together.
Oh, you said this at the Dio documentary.
Yeah.
At the panel we did. Yeah, that's
and
right.
Somehow that got over to England. And from then on, it was like a sarcastic thing that used to apply to us. This isn't music; it's a load of heavy metal being smashed together. And for some reason, we got stuck with it.
Did you have a backup plan when you were a kid in the early years of Sabbath before you knew if the band was going to make it? Was there another interest you had? Did you go to school for something?
Well, I left school when I was 15 and apprenticed to be an accountant for 3 years. And I was absolutely awful at it. And I hated it. Hate going to work from 9 to 5 every day. I just couldn't do it. And eventually I used to get drunk and smashed out of my brains just to get me to go to work. And
So you had to get loaded to go do accounting work.
Yeah. I hated it that much. So I used to go to the pub till 3 in the afternoon, then go turn up at the office at 4 in the afternoon, smash down my brains, take black bombers to get me through the...
What's a black bomber?
These uppers.
I would have hated if you were my accountant, man. The numbers would have been fucked. Hey, Geezer, were you called Geezer then? Did people call you Geezer? They called you Geezer as an accountant?
From when I was 11.
My taxes are being done by Geezer, and he smashed out of his mind, and the government's after me. The numbers are sideways.
And eventually, the guy that run the factory, the office, called me into his office and said, "Butler, you're fired."
Did you take care, because you had that experience, did you do any business work early with the band? Did you count?
Yeah,
when you got paid, were you the guy that collected the money?
It's the only time that we never got ripped off. It's true. I used to get the 20 quid a night that we used to get and spend it on petrol. And then if we had any money, we'd go down the chip shop.
Oh, man. I have a short amount of time here because I promised the audience they could ask you a few questions, but I could talk to you forever. But just a couple quick things I always wanted to ask you. Sometimes people, I think, forget that you actually played with Ozzy in his solo band more than once. You did the No Rest for the Wicked tour, and then you actually played on Osmosis, right?
Yeah.
Which actually is one of my favorite records that he made, is Osmosis. What was that experience like for you playing with Ozzy in the solo band at that time, you know, outside of Sabbath?
It's strange because I'd never played bass to anybody else's music except Sabbath stuff.
Right.
So that was weird, especially with Bob Daisley who used a pick, and I used fingers.
He uses a pick?
Yeah.
I thought you said Bob Daisley was a pig. I want to make sure we get that straight. He uses a pick.
Yeah.
And you use your fingers.
Right. And so his bass playing totally worlds apart from what I do, so I had to learn a completely different style of playing. Mm-hmm. So that was weird. As far as recording the album... The producer that we had, I didn't get on with him at all.
Is that Beinhorn?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So did you like the record, or you just didn't like the process of recording?
I never listened to it.
Do you remember the song Perry Mason? I think that was on that record. I think that was on that record, I think. I don't have all of it in front of me, but I thought there was some great stuff on that record. And I'm jumping around here just because there's stuff I've always wanted to hit you with before we let the audience have some time with you. The Born Again record, the one record with Ian Gillan. Interesting what's happened with that record over the decades, because there's a new appreciation, I think, for it. At the time, it wasn't well received, but in the years since, there's a lot of people that really love that record. What are your recollections about the one record with Ian Gillan?
I think that some of the songs on there are great. I thought the band sounded great. I mean, was playing great on there. I thought Gillan was singing better than ever. Some great riffs, Zero the Hero.
Yeah.
Can't remember.
Trashed.
Trashed, Born Again.
Yeah.
But it just didn't, when we went on it was great doing the album, but somehow the mix didn't get done right. And I kept saying the album to me, the songs to me is, that's not me, it's me dog.
Exactly. Geezer doesn't have a fur ball.
I thought the mix wasn't great on it, but I listened to it about 6 months ago, and I thought it was a really good album.
You know, Tony told me recently that he always wanted to remix it, but they couldn't find the masters. And Tony told me they just found the masters. Did you know that?
I don't think so, no. Maybe that's why I was listening to it again.
Yeah, he said they found the masters, and now he would like to go back in and do an alternate mix of that at some point. I think it'd be cool to have an alternate. I think that as much as the original mix was a bit maligned over the years, it's funny how kind of people almost cite that record as like a precursor to grunge in the way it sounds. So you never know. Sometimes time changes perception.
Yeah,
so
I was surprised how good it was when I listened to it a few months ago.
Yeah.
And I hadn't listened to it since the 80s.
Yeah, yeah. And what about the what seems to be and will be, I'm assuming, the final ever Sabbath record, which is 13, which is now, what, 6-7 years old, something like that at that point. What how did you feel about making that record, and what are your thoughts about it now that some time has passed as a final Sabbath record?
Some of it I liked, some of it I didn't like particularly. It was a weird experience. Especially with being told to forget that you're a heavy metal band.
Is that what Rick Rubin said?
Yeah, that was the first thing he said to us. He played just our very first album and said, cast your mind back to them when there was no such thing as heavy metal or anything like that, and pretend it's like the follow-up album to that, which is a ridiculous thing to think.
Yeah, it's interesting when you hear from musicians over the years who have worked with Rick Rubin. Some love him and praise him. Others are confused by the experience. Sounds like you were, and others flat out didn't like it at all. So where you land somewhere in the middle, it sounds like.
Well, I still don't know what he did.
Well, that's what most people say. But, he lays on a sofa and says, "Sound like this."
Yeah, it's like, yeah, that's good. No, don't do that. And you go, why? Just don't do it. And you'll do it like Ozzy. I think Ozzy one day went nuts because he'd done like 10 different vocals. And Rick kept saying, yeah, that's great, but do another one. And Ozzy just went, if it's great, why am I doing another one? He just lost it. And that's the way it was. It was like Tony wasn't happy with some of the stuff he was trying to make in amps. He was making Tony get 1968 amps, as if that's going to make you sound like back in 1968. It's mad. But it's good for publicity, and it's good for the record company.
Right.
You know, if you got Rick Rubin involved, then it must be good.
I guess. I don't know how many people in the public space actually pay attention to producers or mixers.
It's mainly
record
companies and publishers. Yeah.
It's funny when you talk about as a musician making people doing things over and over and you can't figure out why. I've done a lot of TV in my career, and I've had that too, where I've done two or three takes of something. I've done TV stuff with you, and you look at the camera and they're like, that was really good, but let's get another one. Well, why? You know, what are we doing? It's really good. Come on.
And they never tell you why.
No. They say we need a safety. That's what they call it. A safety for what? You've got it. Let's go. You know, it's ridiculous. You ended up, as everybody knows, you were the lyricist in Sabbath on all the Ozzy records. And then when Ronnie came in, you didn't have to do that anymore. I imagine on Born Again, you didn't do that either. Did Ian Gillan write his own lyrics?
Yeah. Gillan wrote them.
So for you, with doing 13, did you return to being a lyricist? Did you write the lyrics?
I had to. Nobody else would. I mean, Ozzy came up with a lot of the ideas and partial lyrics. And then I was left to fill in everything else. Ozzy wrote, I think, two or three sets of lyrics.
Mm. You miss being on stage?
Not at all.
You don't?
No.
So, because, you know, I've talked to Tony a lot recently, and it sounds like he's got a little bit of an itch to do something musically, whether it's a one-off gig or whether it's just making a record or working on the catalog. Do you talk to him about that at all?
No, not at all.
No. But
the thing is, I did the tour with Deadland Ritual, and Tony hasn't been on stage since the Sabbath.
Right.
Since Sabbath finished. So right. I've already done, you know, had my fill of crap gigs.
So you're done as far as your this stage of your life as far as going
so.
Out as far as going out and performing and touring, jumping up and playing with somebody maybe, but the idea of going out
might be a one off.
Right.
you know, on a whim, but no gigs or anything.
And the idea, if you come up with the stuff you're working on, writing and recording, the chance that you might want to put it out at some point. The beauty of today is you don't have to go through all the record company and producer stuff. You could just go on your website and pump it out tomorrow just to let people hear what you're doing.
Yeah. I mean, I'm still Pedro, my guitarist with GZR, was still sends me loads of stuff. He just came out with that, sent me something last week. It's really, really good, so I might do something with that.
Mm. And when we were at the, in Texas together recently, you were promoting an NFT. Tell the audience about that.
You'll have to ask Lori about that.
Your wife.
I've no
Did
idea.
It come out?
Yeah, but the company that put it out isn't great. Yellow Heart or something they're called. So it's a three-part NFT. So the next two parts will be on a coming out on a different company.
The money that you raised from it, you were giving to Ukraine, I think, right?
Yeah. The animals and help the animals reunite with the families in Ukraine.
Yeah, I saw that on the news. It was heartbreaking. It's heartbreaking, of course, across the board, what's going on there. But the animals, the impact on that, I saw a few news pieces on that.
It's terrible because you see not only are these little kids like being bombed and everything, but the pets are nowhere to be found. And as a kid growing up with a dog, all was in my life. It's like one of the main parts of your family.
Yeah. You know where else there's a real big animal crisis right now is in Shanghai. I don't know if you caught that on the news, but because they're locked down because of COVID, they've gone out of their heads with a couple people have COVID and locking people in their houses. They're taking their animals away from them and leaving them in bags and to die on the road. It's one of the most heartbreaking things what's going on there as well.
It's horrendous.
You have been a vegetarian for how long?
Since I was about between 8 and 12 years old.
Vegetarian or vegan?
Vegetarian and then vegan for the past 35 years.
So what inspired you to be a vegetarian that young? Was it your love of animals or was it something else?
It was one day I had this piece of, I'd only ever eat meat if it was like burnt to a crisp. And we didn't have much anyway when I was growing up. And this one day it wasn't burnt to a crisp and I cut it open and blood came out of it. And I just freaked out when I saw this blood.
At 8?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I said to my mum, why is the blood on this? And she said, it's from an animal. And what? And I just thought, you know, the thought of killing my dog and eating it, and it just stuck in my head, and I could never eat meat after that.
And you became a vegan how long ago?
About 35 years.
You've been a vegan for 35 years?
Yes.
What inspired that?
Health
or just...
Because on the road, if you say vegetarian, some people used to give you chicken and stuff like that for some reason. So I used to write, no, just vegan, no animals whatsoever, or butter or dairy or anything like that. Mm. And it was just an easier way to do it. I mean, at home, it's up to you. You can make, you know exactly what goes into everything. But when you're on the road, you're trusting the caterers. So it was easier for me to say vegan, so they didn't put butter or anything like that in the meals.
Is there any food that you really missed back in the day that you used to like to eat that you don't anymore?
No, not really, because you can get everything vegan now anyway.
Right. Is your wife, is Gloria vegan?
Nah.
Is she vegetarian?
Nope.
So do you get freaked out if she's sitting across from eating a steak?
No, I'm not that kind of a person that puts people down for eating me. It's just that it's my personal choice and that's it.
Right. And you've been sober now for how long?
About 7 years.
Well, congratulations. What Thanks facilitated that? Because you and I have had some nights where you haven't been sober.
Well, that's why.
They were fun nights, but I understand. But was there one incident, or was it the thing that happened with you? You got in a fight with somebody or something a few years back.
What's it called?
It's in Arizona?
Death Valley.
Which is here in Nevada, right? I think.
California.
Okay. Was that the thing that facilitated it, or was it something you were thinking about
anyway? Yeah, waking up, coming round covered in blood, and in prison, in jail, got me thinking, I think I better become sober.
Was that difficult for you to do after all these years of drinking?
No, it was. I just felt totally ashamed of myself. I mean, bloke my age still fighting in bars. Ridiculous.
Did you go through some sort of treatment, or did you just flip the switch?
Yeah, I went to rehab.
You did?
And yeah, got through that.
And so obviously that was effective and stuck for you.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, that's good. Congratulations. Amazing. Vegan, sober, look at you. You look great. How old are you now, 73?
109.
No, you're not. Get out of here.
73 in July.
73. You're still young, man. You are. Look at Mick Jagger up there still playing, all these guys still playing. You can still do it. I saw Glenn Hughes last night. He was here in Vegas. I told him he couldn't believe you were living here. I said, you got to hit up Geese. Glenn and I were hanging out last night.
I've seen him about a month ago.
Yeah. I said to Glenn, Glenn looks like he's like, you know, he's still got the hair. He's ready to go. He's singing great and everything. You could do that, man. You're the same age.
Thanks.
You're done. You don't want to do it. Oh, man. Last thing before we let a few people in the audience say hello to you. You were working on a book. Where are you at with that?
Finished. I sent the manuscript in 3 weeks ago. So now I'm just waiting for the edited version to come back so I can go nuts.
Go nuts in how? Like what?
If they've edited out
stuff you want.
Politically
in.
Incorrect stuff.
Right. Right. So yeah. When is your time? When do you expect it to come out? You hope the end of the year?
I think it's looking like the beginning of next year now.
Okay. And it's your life story. It's an autobiography, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
I can't wait to read it. So we'll look forward to that towards the end of the year. And hopefully they leave in all the politically incorrect stuff.
But the trouble is, ever since I sent in the manuscript, I've thought about 7 things I've left out.
Right.
So I'm going to probably drive them nuts now. So.
Well, no, that's to hold on to that, because that's when you do the sequel. When the first one comes out and does well.
Yeah, that's 10 pages long.
You do the second one. No, that's okay. You'll have more experiences. You'll have more stories. There'll be more stuff in there. All right. Geezer Butler is here. Thank you so much, Geese, for taking some time out. I appreciate it. I know you're not busy at all, apparently, because you're retired.
That's right.
It's not like you have anything else to do. Let's get a few phone calls on for Geezer. This is Ryan in Minnesota, who is going to kick us off. Hold on. I just need to reboot my phones here to make sure this is working right. And Ryan, are you there?
Hey, Eddie and Geese. It's actually Brian in Minnesota. But
Brian. Go ahead, Brian.
Great to be on with you, Geezer. Before I ask my question, I got to tell you, 26 years ago, when I was an up-and-coming young radio jock myself, you were one of my very first interviews, and you were very gracious to talk to then, and you're always a pleasure to see live and listen to. So thank you again for doing that 26 years ago.
Thank you, Brian.
Well, yeah, thank you, man. It was great. I mean, like I said, it was one of my first interviews, and you couldn't have been a better person to talk to. My question for you today is talking about Black Sabbath and the Heaven and Hell project with Ronnie. What would you have seen in the future for that if Ronnie hadn't unfortunately passed away at the time that he did?
Well, I think Ronnie was about to do another solo album, and then we were talking about doing something after his solo album.
Yeah, he was working on I think another Magica, because there's one song that was done actually, and that's what I know he was working on at the time. Let's say hello to Ray, who is in New York, joining us now. Hey, Ray.
Hey, Geezer, how are you, sir? First of all, I got to tell you, I'm a bass player, and up next to you, I sound like a third grader playing. So thank you for that. Appreciate that. question lyrically, and you know, the way they marketed Sabbath was a very evil, dark band, when lyrically there was a lot of spirituality in there, a lot of it being positive. In fact, Stryper even covered your song After Forever, I believe. I'm curious as to the background of those lyrics spiritually, where they came from, if you held to a certain faith or still do?
Well, I was brought up very, very strict Catholic.
He is really wearing a shirt that says Hail Satan, by the way. I'm not making that up when he walked in.
And then I talked to the dark side. Turned to the dark side. No, I was brought up in a very strict Catholic. I used to love going to church and mass. And so obviously that I really believed in Satan and all that kind of crap. And so that sort of went over to the lyrics that I wrote. After Forever was probably the most Christian song that's ever been. It was based on all the sectarian violence in Ireland, Northern Ireland. My parents were from Ireland, so it really affected me to see Protestants and Catholics killing themselves, killing each other over the same kind of belief.
Was it the news and the stuff that was happening in the 70s that inspired your lyrics? Was a lot of it when you sat down to write? Was it challenging for you to write lyrics? Were you kind of, into it begrudgingly?
No, I was very poetical when I was a kid, I was at school. I was really good at English language and English literature. So it's part of where I was into.
And the inspiration for it and the things that shaped your lyric writing, whether it was religion or the news of the day at the time, that's really what the Sabbath songs are about at that point.
Yeah, it was anti-war, all the stuff that was going on in Vietnam and all that. My brothers had been drawn into the Suez Canal War, and I saw what the effect that had on my mom. So,
what's Iron? Where did the lyrics from Iron Man come from?
It was sort of based on Jesus Christ.
Well, I never put that together.
Yeah, it's like this guy that goes and does good, and then he comes, he's trying to spread the word, and ends up being crucified for telling the truth. And that was like Iron Man coming, seeing the future, coming back to tell the world how horrible it's going to be. And people turn against him. But whereas Jesus, died to save people, Iron Man takes his revenge, and that's the biggest difference.
Is he live or dead? The first lyric in the song.
Yeah.
Yeah, wow. That's amazing. All right, let's say hello to Chad in South Carolina, because I'm just trying to move quick because we have limited time here. Chad, go ahead. You're on with Geezer.
Hey, Geezer. I got to say, it is just an honor to get to talk with you. One of my all-time favorite bands is Sabbath, so thank you for all that you've done.
Cheers, Chad.
Hey, thanks. My quick question is, so my brother, he is an aspiring bass player, and he also looks up to you as one of his many influences. So my question is, what kind of advice would you give for aspiring bass players today?
Just stick with it. I mean, but it's hard to progress on your own. So as long as he plays, to get a drum machine or something like that, that can improve your playing. To have something to play to or along with can improve. And just practice every day. Keep practicing and practicing and practicing.
All right, Chad. Thank you for the call. Do you play guitar much, Geez, still, just for fun?
Yes.
You do?
Yes, because it's hard to write stuff just on bass.
Right.
So, I write most of the stuff on guitar.
Here's Adam in Wisconsin on Live with Geezer Butler here on Trunk Nation. Hey, Adam.
Hey, Eddie, and it's an honor to talk to you, Geezer. I've been listening to your music for years. I kind of went backwards in a way because my dad introduced me because he was a huge fan of the Heaven and Hell Mob Rules era. And then I kind of, because I always kind of took the Ozzy stuff for granted, but the lyrics are still fantastic in those albums.
Thank you.
So it's an honor to talk to you. What I wanted to ask about is an album that doesn't get talked about it too much, but I think is fantastic, is Cross Purposes, one of the Tony Martin era ones, or the only one that you ever really played on. Any good memories from that? I mean, I know it was kind of the contentious period for Sabbath, but I still think there's some fantastic songs on there, like Evil Eye and The Hand That Rocks the Cradle, and songs like that.
Yeah, it was one of the few albums where I'd written a lot of the songs as well as Tony, because usually it was Tony that wrote the music and I'd write the lyrics. But on that album, I think I wrote half of the music on there. So that was a total change from usual.
You good, Adam?
I think it's fantastic. I'm sorry?
Thank you.
No, I said, are you good? Did you have a follow-up or are you good?
No, just sing your praises. And I'm also a bass player too, but I'm a plectrum player. Every time I try to play like Lady Evil or any of the stuff with Ozzy, like Hand of Doom, my hand always cramps up. So you're the master, man.
Cheers, thanks,
Adam. Take care. Do you, as you've gotten older, is it more challenging to play the way you play? Do you have problems with your hands, your fingers, anything? I mean, that happens a lot with drummers, I know, and some musicians. Their arm, their elbow, their shoulders. You have ever had problems?
Not really, no.
That's good.
I mean, the only problems I have is whizzing around the stage like I used to.
Right.
And I would just stand there and play.
In all the lyrics that you've written on all the Sabbath stuff, was there ever a time where you presented them to Ozzy and he looked at them and he said, "What the fuck are you writing about?"
Yes.
Is there one or two stories that jumps out where you had to sit down with him and say, "No, this is how you got to phrase it. This is what we're going for."
No, he does all the phrasing and everything like that. But I have to write the lyric to the nth degree, every tiny little syllable that it comes up with. If the word that I use is like two syllables and he's only singing one syllable, he won't sing it.
So you write it out phonetically almost?
You have to. Otherwise, he won't sing it. But I always remember Paranoid, when I wrote the lyrics to Paranoid. What's Paranoid mean?
He didn't know what even Paranoid meant, the word.
He'd sang it, and like about 2 weeks later, what's Paranoid mean anyway?
Well, Zach Wilde once told me a story about Mr. Crowley, because in Ozzy's solo career, as I'm sure you know, Bob Daisley was you. Bob Daisley played all the bass and wrote all the lyrics.
Yeah.
So one time Zach told me a story, something about he was reading some story about the occult or something, and I think Bob Daisley had wrote Mr. Crowley about Aleister Crowley or something, right?
Yeah.
And Ozzy goes, was reading a book or something, Aleister Crowley goes, what is that rubbish about? And Zach goes, that's the guy you've been singing about for 40 years. And he said, oh, this Mr. Crowley had no idea. Oh, God, it's too funny. All right, a few more minutes left to go here with Geezer Butler live from Vegas today here on Trunk Nation. The big NFL draft is today, Geezer. You got any interest in that?
Absolutely none.
You went to the
Super Bowl.
Super Bowl, though, right?
Yeah.
I saw some photos. So you like sports.
You
don't care about the draft, but you watch. You're a Rams fan, right?
Yeah.
Because of when they were, because your ties Louis. To St. Louis, right?
Yeah.
And the Cardinals, I know that's pretty much your sports allegiance, right?
Yeah.
And but soccer, British, football. Yeah, European football is your thing. What's
Absolutely.
Your team again?
Aston Villa.
And who else? Sabbath was a fan of that team.
Nobody was like me because I bleed it. Ozzy occasionally went there. Tony occasionally went there, but nobody's a fanatic like I am.
So was there a compete? Who's the biggest rival to Aston Villa?
Birmingham City.
And was anybody in Sabbath a fan of that team?
No.
Oh, okay.
The band wouldn't have existed if there was.
I was curious about that. Because, like, you know, I'm a big Giants fan, so we don't like the Dallas Cowboys or the Eagles or Washington. So yeah, I don't know much about your type of football, so I didn't know how that rivalry framed itself.
It's pure hatred.
Yeah, well, that's how we are in American football, too, with our rivals. So let's say hello to Mike, who's in New York. Get him in real quick. Go ahead, Mike.
Hello, Geezer. Thank you for taking my call. I'm a huge fan. I just wanted to ask a question about what was it like working with Ronnie James Dio on the Devil You Know album, and what kind of writing contributions did he make, and what was the process like? Thank you.
It was fantastic because we wrote, he had a studio in his basement, and me and Tony used to go around to his studio with our ideas, and it was nice and intimate. The three of us would sit down in the basement with Mike Exeter on the control board, and we just discussed what we were going to do. I'd maybe come up with a riff, and Ronnie would go away and think about that, put some lyrics to it and everything, and Tony would have a riff. So it was really good. It's really an easy album to write.
You know, we talked a little bit about the different singers you worked with in Sabbath and the different periods of time and all that went on. One of the things we didn't touch on was the different drummers. because of course Bill Ward on all the classic early stuff, but Vinny Appice coming in, you as the bass player, you got to lock in with the drummer. Even on the Born Again tour, that was Bev Bevan that played, right?
On the tour, yeah.
Yeah. So how did you feel about working with some of those different drummers, whether it was Vinny or Bev, or I don't know if you worked with any others in Sabbath. I don't know if Cozy or anybody, but how did you lock in with them, and what were the adjustments versus playing with Bill?
Well, me and Bill, I think we're totally unique because Bill's got this swing feel to his playing.
Yeah.
So we really grew up together. Vinny is great, straightforward, great timekeeper, powerful drummer. It was great. You know, I've played with the best drummers. So.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's so important for you as a bass player to be comfortable and locked in with. Do you remember Vinny told me the very first show he ever played with Sabbath, I think he said was in Hawaii, and he had all the charts written out on paper on his drums, and then a big gust of wind came, and because it was an outdoor gig, and blew it all away.
Yeah,
he was literally left twisting in the wind.
We had like two days rehearsal in L.A., because the promoter in Hawaii, because it was a big football stadium that we were playing.
Yeah.
The promoter threatened to sue us to death, so we couldn't cancel it. We had 2 days rehearsal with Vinny and off to Hawaii and just hope for the best.
What was the most Spinal Tap moment in your career? Because some have said there's stuff in Spinal Tap that was taken from Sabbath and Sabbath experiences.
The Stonehenge thing.
Well, that was for the Born Again tour, right?
Yeah. And the tour manager, he wrote the, because Don Arden managed us at the time, and right. He says, oh, it'd be great to have a Stonehenge backdrop and all this kind of, with the sun rising up as you're playing. And we're going, how are you going to have the sun rising up on stage? And so he says, yeah, it's got to do the Stonehenge thing, because one of the tracks was called Stonehenge on the Born Again album. And so the tour manager wrote down the specs to build the Stonehenge thing. And he wrote them in feet, and went to the place that made them, and they did it in meters. So it's three times bigger than what it was supposed to be. We couldn't fit it on any stage.
So you had the reverse issue of Spinal Tap, where the Stonehenge was too big.
Yeah.
And Spinal Tap was too small.
Yeah. And in the end, we got to America, and we just had to leave it in the docks in America.
What did you, when you saw the movie Spinal Tap, were you offended by it, or did you get a kick out of it?
Lovely, it's brilliant. Okay. I used to play every day on the bus on tour.
Because there are some musicians that felt it was a little too close to home and was taking the piss too much.
I think Iron Maiden hated it.
It's timeless. It's the best movie. It still holds up. It's 40 years later. It's incredible. Let me see if I can get one more quick one in. Let's get... Dan in Toronto, real quick, Dan.
Hi, guys. How are you doing today?
Good, Dan. Real quick with your question, Dan, because I'm almost out of time.
My question is, one, honored and a privilege to talk to you, Geese.
Thank you, Dan.
Electric Funeral Fire, where did that come from?
Electric Funeral. It was a bit like what we're going through now, the threat of nuclear war. Which was the height of the Cold War going on at the time, and it was like air raid. You got to build your nuclear air raid shelters and all that. So it came about from that.
Do you have a favorite Black Sabbath song?
No, not really.
Do you have a favorite Black Sabbath album?
No.
Do you ever go listen to your old stuff?
Occasionally, but very rarely.
Just maybe for just to go back in time, or do you listen to it usually for a reason? Like I have to approve something.
I've got non-favorite albums.
What's your non-favorite album?
Never Say Die.
Okay. What about Technical Ecstasy?
That was good. I like that.
You like that one?
Some of them was that the one with Gypsy on it?
I think, yeah.
That was the worst song I ever wrote.
Never Say Die, least favorite, just because it was unraveling at that time?
Yeah. All the problems we had doing it, and just
the title track is killer on that, though. I love the song Never Say Die.
It's not, the songs aren't that bad, it's just the band was like in turmoil back then. It's
right.
Just like I just every time I hear it, I always think of the horrible things we're going through.
Right. All right, well, that music means we're out of time. I can't thank you enough for coming by.
Well, thank you, Eddie.
I appreciate it. You know where I'm at now, so yep. Don't be a stranger. Come sit in anytime. You could be my co-host. You're retired. You might want to start a career in radio.
Oh, all right, yeah.
You could come sit here and just, you know, tell us some stories. I'd love it. My audience would, too. Thank you so much. Seriously, I appreciate it. Thank you for coming by, Eddie. Well, always great to visit with Gies. You know, it's always incredible when you have the opportunity to talk to legendary, legendary artists like that who have made such massive contributions. I mean, as well as I know him, just to be able to say, hey, so what are the lyrics in Iron Man about? Because he wrote them is just surreal. And that was like a real pinch me moment during that conversation for me. And by the way, I didn't know the answer. I was very surprised to hear the answer because I had no clue. But it's just something you take for granted. You've heard that song a billion times. Like, hey, what is this actually about? I always thought it was like a sci-fi thing or something. But who knew? He said he wrote it about Jesus. I mean, that's unbelievable. So we could talk to Gies forever. We'll have him back. And again, thanks to Geezer Butler. Hope you enjoyed the conversation. For the most part, the takeaway there is he's pretty much retired. And he's enjoying having a home here in Vegas. And also he has a home in Utah, he splits time between, and of home in England still as well. And we'll do more with him. He's my neighbor when I'm in Vegas. So hopefully we can do more down the line. And I appreciate him, and I thank his wife, Gloria, and manager, she is as well, for setting that up for me. And look forward to his book coming out soon. Thank you all for listening to the podcast. Again, please join me if you're in the U.S. or Canada and you have SiriusXM. Please join me every day talking rock with you on Volume Channel 106, live 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern for Trunk Nation. Nightly re-airs 10 to midnight Eastern, and full shows, audio, video, more, anything you want, anytime you want on the SiriusXM app. If you're only listening to the podcast and you can get SiriusXM, you're only getting a fraction of what I do on a daily basis every week on the radio. Thanks to Joel Pollack for producing. I will see you guys next Thursday for another all-new podcast and on the radio every day, live 2 o'clock Eastern Time on Volume Channel 106. Have a good week.
Hey there. I host a show called Therapy Gecko, where I dress up as a lizard and talk to anonymous strangers from the internet about their lives. They tell me their relationship problems.
I found out that I was related to the guy that I was dating.
Their hobbies.
I collect my roommate's toenails and fingernails.
Their secrets.
When we did not have toilet paper, I would use the shower curtain.
And also sometimes kind of serious stuff.
I have anxiety when I talk to people.
I'm also sometimes joined by celebrity guests like Doja Cat, Lil Yachty, Bobby Lee, and Eric Andre. Some of the more interesting calls we've gotten recently include a guy who argued with a demon living on his wall, a caller drunk at his job at a middle school, and a caller wondering whether or not he should transform into a dog. So if you're sick of your own life and you want to get lost in the life of a stranger, search for Therapy Gecko wherever you get your podcasts.